Hello, everybody. This is Kendra Abbe, and welcome to Focus on Photography for another chit-chat about what we love most. And I'm here with Joshua Holko, who is multi-award-winning, huge. I'm humbled to have him here. He's just been awarded the Australian Institute of Professional Photography's Victorian Photographer of the Year. Welcome, Joshua Holko.
Thank you, Kendra. It's wonderful to be here in some cool, brisk Melbourne weather.
And what a story you've got. You know, how can you call that brisk? You've just come back from Iceland.
I did have a month in Namibia in between.
As you do. What were you doing in Namibia? What is it, Namibia?
Namibia. I've always wanted to go to the oldest deserts in the world. And they have these incredible sand dunes there that they're blood red in colour, full of rhyolite iron, and just amazing place for landscape photography. And a couple of years ago, I decided I was going to go there, so I took a couple of workshops over there, and we spent the better part of 3 weeks travelling through the country and photographing everything from sand dunes to desert lions and elephants.
That's extraordinary. You spend your life with wildlife, in nature, and I'm speechless. You know, I want actually people to have, if they've got computers in front of them, to have a look now at www.jholko.com. And as Josh is talking and sharing his experience with us in photography, I would like people to have a look at your work because it is truly breathtaking.
Thank you very much.
I said a minute ago, I'm absolutely speechless by the work that you do. But when people look at your work, when I look at your work, it's like watching an incredible film. I think as a photographer myself, I don't just see the image as, well, this is a pretty picture. I see it from the photographer's point of view. And people, when you're looking at Josh's work, remember he was there. I mean, it's incredible, incredible, incredible. Polar bears and penguins, and tell me more, Josh.
Well, where to start?
Well, I want to start where it began with you. You know, when did you first pick up a camera and get off on the click of the shutter?
That's a really good question. I've always had photography in my life pretty much as long as I can remember. When I was, I don't know, 9, 10 years old, my dad was studying photography part-time, actually at PSC. He was doing fine art photography.
My old school.
Yeah, mine too.
That's Photography Studies College in South Melbourne. We love them.
We do. And he used to drag me around the country, you know, more or less carrying the tripod and being second assistant. And that's where I really got my love for it.
Which is, and you probably didn't realise at the time you were doing an apprenticeship.
No, I didn't, but it's really stood me in good stead.
So how old were you?
Look, I think I was 9 or 10 at the time when I first started to get interested.
That's fantastic. So did you start sort of seeing the world in a different way, or it's probably gone on so long that you've probably only ever seen the world as a photographer?
I think I've seen it as a photographer for a long time, but I think my visions continue to be more refined as the years have gone on, and I've certainly come down to more of an idea of what I want to shoot.
Do you remember what you first shot with?
I do, and it was a Kodak disc camera, and it was a horrible camera.
That's really funny.
Yeah, it had a tiny little negative, and the image quality was absolutely abysmal, but it was really enough to get me hooked.
Yeah, it is one of those things that is completely highly addictive. And I think there's, even though, you know, the photographers that I have on the show, everyone's had a different journey and they've come to photography, you know, some later in life and some earlier in life, if they've been blessed enough for that bell to go off. But we've all got that same passion, you know, that same love of what we do. We bounce out of bed, you know.
That's really the key to it. And I think if you're passionate about what you do and you're passionate about your photography and your subject, you're going to do really, really good work.
And it's going to take us to incredible places. Having said that, we're going to listen to a song that was released today. It's actually the Shantuzis. And it is a song called Baby It's You. It is mind-blowing. It has gone nuts today all over the internet. So we're going to be back after Baby It's You by the Shantuzis.
You're here with me now, but you're saying you don't want the end anymore. You're holding me now, but you're saying you
God bless the Shantuzis. My God, with a combined age of 209, life begins at 50, everyone. That's it. That's just, they're just gorgeous. Josh, did you see the Shantuzis today at all on TV?
What a great song. I haven't seen it as yet, but I kind of live in a box, so I'll have to crawl out of that box when I get home and have a look.
That, it is just such, these girls are such an inspiration to every woman out there that, you know, like I said, life begins at 50. It's just awesome. Now, back to photography, Josh. So we've talked about where it began. We've talked about, I mentioned the fact that you're a master photographer and printer and won all these awards this, in fact, last Thursday?
Yeah, it was the VIP Awards were held last, judging, I think it was Tuesday and Wednesday, and then the awards dinner was on Thursday night.
So what did you win?
I won the Victorian Science Environment and Nature Photographer of the Year, Creative Photographer of the Year, the highest scoring print of the year, and also the overall title of Victorian Photographer of the Year. So it was quite a humbling experience.
Humbling. I'm humbled to have you here. It's like sitting opposite God. Honestly, it's just incredible. What an incredible amount of work. And, you know, the places your photography has taken you. You know, I've always said that photography is such a magical occupation because it can take you into any industry you've got a passion for, whether it's sport or whether it's fashion or whether it's music, you know.
That's and so true.
Yours has taken you because your love of nature and the wilderness and wildlife, and so that's what you shoot. And it's, your printing is extraordinary. You know, I looked only online at your prints. I haven't seen one actually. You print on a very special paper that's made by a company.
I do. I print on a paper by a company called Moab.
Moab, yeah.
Yeah, it's a paper actually made by one of the oldest paper mills in the world. It's called Somerset Museum Rag, and it's 100% rag-based cotton paper. It's a wonderful, supple feel to it. It just, and the way it renders tones is just really beautiful.
So how does the quality of paper make a difference? Explain to people out there who don't understand that when you go to, you know, a 9-cent printing place and get your little holiday snaps done, it's not going to be the same as what the Moab paper that you print on.
No, they're two very, very different ends of the scale. The print we get from a lab is really just cookie cutter off a machine, whereas the fine art print is really crafted. Hmm. It has much, much better colour and depth and rendition.
And shelf life.
And, yeah, a much, much longer shelf life. In the hundreds of years now with these new inkjet printers. And the quality that we can get out of these inkjet printers today is really phenomenal. And there's something quite sensuous about holding a really beautifully crafted print in your hands. And for me, it's really about the print. I really love it when people get to see my work in print rather than digitally.
Yeah, and it's really important for people to understand that, you know, the difference between a regular print they get, you know, 9 cents, like I said, 9 cents down the street or whatever it is, and an archival print, because, you know, everyone's got photos that are sitting on their shelves, whatever, from 1973 or whenever it is, and they're all going off. They're discoloring, and you know the importance of properly printing, you know, using archival methods on amazing paper with amazing chemistry. It means that the photos are going to last so much longer.
That's so true. And you know, when I'm gone, I want to be able to leave prints behind for people to look through, and not just ones and zeros on a hard drive.
Yeah, absolutely. So we spoke about you going to PSC, which is my old school. How important do you think a formal education is, and the strength that the analog education that you had has given you, as opposed to someone who just, you know, picks up a camera and starts shooting?
It's a good question. I think for me, it really laid the foundations for exposure. I very much try and get everything in one shot in the camera. So I try not to, or I don't do HDR composite work or any of that sort of Photoshop stuff.
High dynamic range, for those who don't know.
Yeah, everything I do is one capture. And I learned to do that shooting slide film because there was so little latitude in slide film. We had maybe a third of a stop if we were lucky. And if we blew it by more than a third of a stop, it was in the bin. So I learned to get it right in camera. And that has stood me in good stead right through my career. And I think also the formal training that I had in art, I studied fine art photography, and just learning the vision of artists who've gone before us is a really beneficial way to improve your own photography.
I agree with that completely. And also looking at galleries, you know, all over the world, and I'm talking painting galleries, not just photography galleries.
Totally agree.
You know, learning, just being observant and seeing how other people see, and thinking, looking at imagery and thinking, well, why did they do that? Why did they frame it like that? And you know, saying to, and even with films also, looking at film and thinking, well, if I was shooting that, would I have shot it the same way? Because you learn so much from other people's work.
Yeah, and there's so many masters who've gone before us who we can learn from. So there's a wonderful opportunity, if you can't get out and shoot with your camera, to go to a gallery or go to a museum and just have a look at the work that other people have produced.
Mm.
And over a period of time, your own work will certainly improve.
Mm. I've actually, there's a little exercise I've done with kids where we've actually just cut a frame out of an A4 piece of paper, okay, and cut the middle out like it's a frame, and you hold it out, hold your arms out straight in front of you with the frame and walk around, no camera, just the frame, and just look at the world through a frame, and it changes your perspective on everything.
Yeah, what a great way to learn to see. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. It's really, really effective. So, yeah, I said before that your passion for the planet is extraordinary in your work. Tell me, you know, the imagery is just truly breathtaking, the colours, everything, the moments that you found. You know, you must get up really early in the morning before sunrise.
It's certainly long hours in the field. There's no doubt about that. I'm a really big believer that if you want to get really good imagery, particularly in nature, you need to put the time and the hours in the field.
Mm.
And you need to be out there when the sun is rising and before the sun is rising, you need to be out there in the inclement weather, and you just have to put those hours in, because when the magic happens, if you're not there, you're not there.
Mm. And the best light is not the middle of the day, folks.
No, most definitely not.
At any time of year, in any country.
No, we're looking for really soft light, so that beautiful light that we have just before the sun comes over the horizon in the morning and just after the sun goes down. So I like to shoot, you know, I specialise in polar photography and what I call polar and subpolar, so a lot of the work that I do is in areas where we've got the midnight sun. So sunrise doesn't last 5 minutes. It lasts 5 hours.
Wow. So tell me about your travels. Where have you been? List up all the countries.
Oh, wow.
With your camera. We're talking where photography is taking you. We're not talking holidays.
No. Well, nowadays I really only travel for my photography. I come home to have a holiday. I'm only home roughly 6 months of the year. The rest of the time I'm traveling. I did just come home from a month in Iceland. And then from Iceland I went straight to Namibia in Africa.
You're glossing over it. Tell me about Iceland.
Well, Iceland's incredible. It's nowhere else on the planet that I've ever been has such a diverse range of subject matter in such a small area. I mean, geographically, it's roughly the same size as the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
But it has everything from incredible glaciers. Actually, it has Europe's largest glacier and ice cap, the Vatnajökull Glacier. And that covers fully a third of the country. And then you've also got icebergs, Arctic tundra, mountains, incredible waterfalls. You've got geothermal areas. You've got just about everything you could want in a really easy to reach. Everything's really close together. Combine all of that with midnight sun and beautiful light that goes on for hours and hours, and it's just an incredible location to do photography.
Wow. We had Tom Putt on the show a few weeks ago, and I know he was on the trip to Iceland with you, and he was talking about some very strange food.
Look, they do. He was on my trip. He came on my winter trip in March this year, and like a lot of countries, they do have their native foods. But and you can still buy them things like cured shark meat and various other things that they have there. But I'm not personally a fan.
No, so the breakfast. So tell me what an Icelandic breakfast is.
Well, it's very European. So they have a lot of cold meats and cheese.
Okay, and well, that's civilized.
Yeah, it's quite civilized.
Because the language, I have a few Icelandic friends, if they're listening, you know, hello. The language is completely unrecognizable to anything that's remotely similar to English. You know,
no,
like
I know.
Italian and Spanish, you can pick up a few words here and there. Icelandic is just completely, there's not a sound. And the way that their words can, worse, you know, it's like worse than Welsh. I mean, that's interesting spelling in itself, but
it is a hard language to pronounce, and if you're looking at road signs, it can be a little bit like someone's vomited consonants all over it. I mean, it's very difficult, but everyone in Iceland speaks English, so they learn English at school, so you don't need to be able to speak Icelandic. It's a very easy country to move around in.
It's become a very popular holiday destination, not just for photographers.
No, it really has. In fact, tourism is up there something like 20% year on out.
Which is great, because they probably needed it.
They certainly needed it after the currency collapse. Yeah.
Absolutely. Very interesting. We're going to listen, talking about hotels and travelling. The next song is Olivia Newton-John. It's a song that was written by Brett Goldsmith, who we had on the show last year. Brett wrote this song called Ordinary Life and produced the new album for Olivia called Hotel Sessions, which correlates to her Las Vegas concerts that she's doing now, because she's a bit of a regular there in Las Vegas. And this song is called Ordinary Life, written by Brett Goldsmith, sung by Olivia Newton-John. Enjoy.
When I am gone, you'll carry on. Your parting words, they linger on. I've got so much to say, and I love the things you hate. I've seen it all, I've been around. I've knocked them back like a fool.
That was Olivia Newton-John's new song called Ordinary Life, written by Brett Goldsmith and produced. The whole album's produced by Brett Goldsmith. I'm Kendra Abbe. This is Focus on Photography, and I'm here with Joshua Holko, master photographer and printer. And Josh, before the little musical interlude, we were talking about Iceland and your travels in Iceland. Keep going. Where to next? Like, you've travelled everywhere.
Well, not everywhere. There are places I haven't been yet that I'm working on. I'd really like to go to a place called Kamchatka in Russia, which is on the not far from Siberia, actually. It's an area of really pristine wilderness.
Okay, before you go on about that, this is you actually take people on tours, though. Don't you? So yeah. Anyone out there who's listening, who's inspired by what Josh is saying, you can get onto Josh's website, which is jholko.com, and see where the next tour is going to and go with him. And we're going to talk a bit more about that in a minute. But, okay, take us on the journey.
Okay, so I'm always looking for new places to go, new places that a lot of people haven't been to, that are very remote, that are very untouched, pure wilderness. And this area in Kamchatka is one of those areas where it's very, very difficult to get to. There's no access by road. You can only go by helicopter. So you're going on a Russian helicopter. It's 3 or 4 hours to get in there. And once you get in there, you've got pure pristine wilderness in this largest valley of geysers. It's actually the largest valley of geysers in the world. And you've got stellar sea eagles and brown bears that come there to feed on the salmon that are coming up the river. So it's just a really untouched place. And I'm trying to organize to go into that area at the moment.
Wow. Is that somewhere you'd be catching dinner?
Hopefully I'm catching some good shots.
Oh, so you like six-star hotels too on these travels?
Not on that one. It would be nice. It's interesting. When we move around Iceland, we're moving in usually just guest houses. So small guest houses and hotels that give us just really nice accommodation close to our shooting locations. And when I'm shooting from ship, it's what I call luxury shooting. It's really sip-click photography because you can go outside from your cabin, walk outside, shoot amazing icebergs or polar bears, and if you get cold, you go inside and have a hot chocolate.
Oh, God, life's tough.
Yeah, someone's got to do it right.
It is such a lifestyle, though, being a photographer, and, you know, I can't push it enough. It is a great life, and you can use it to do anything you want.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're passionate about photography and you're passionate about your subject, you're going to produce good work, and you're going to get behind and back yourself to do it.
Absolutely. In fact, there was a careers day at Monash University the other day, and a lot of the local schools were involved. And, you know, the kids were mesmerized by the stories of photography and graphic art, which was really, it's cool and it's inspiring. And there were 100 kids there listening. And I hope some of them pick it up.
I get really inspired on the trips that I do when I see people who come along who are not full-time professionals, but they want to travel to these places and make great images, and they're passionate about what they do. And I see their images at the end of the trip, and they're just incredible.
I'm sure they think they are as well, because it's a new, whole new experience. And I'm sure you inspire them and teach them how to see. Tell me, you know, with these tours, do people need expensive equipment? What do they need to be able to come with you?
No. In fact, I'm not an advocate for having all the greatest lenses and all the greatest cameras. It's really just about having a passion for photography. I'd like to tell a story. I have a very good client who's been with me several times to both Antarctica and Iceland. And he was in Iceland with me last year, and I found him just sitting cross-legged in the grass, processing images that he'd shot on his iPhone just in the field.
Yeah.
And they were just beautiful images. And they were just shot on an iPhone. And I saw some of the prints he made subsequently, and they were wonderful. So you don't need to have the latest and greatest camera.
No, not to be able to see. You can just have a piece of paper with a square cut in the middle.
Totally.
No, I'm serious. You know, I think photos are our memory, and it's really important to print them because, you know, we need to remember things because a lot of people don't. It's just the most important thing is to take photographs, and it doesn't matter what with.
Yeah, that's very true. And the easier that is for you, and the more the camera gets out of the way, the more you free up your creative vision.
And there's little tips, you know, even with the iPhone that a lot of people don't know, and I've said once before and I'll say it again, you know, if you touch the screen, if you've got a very high contrast shot, with an iPhone I'm talking, and you touch this, and sometimes, you know, people drop into shadows if there's backlight and stuff. If you touch that person, if they're backlit, the exposure corrects.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
So touch the shadows. Peeps out there, touch whatever is important to expose correctly for in that shot. If it's a high contrast shot, touch what is important, whether it's skin tones or birthday cake, whatever it is, birthday candles. Touch what's important and the screen will correct the exposure. Another good iPhone tip is that, you know, everyone takes vertical shots constantly. It's actually best to take landscape shots because that's the shape of the screen we're viewing them on, the computer screen or the iPad screen. And also if your iPhone is in landscape mode, most people don't know that the volume button, which would normally, you know, you change the volume on an iPhone, put it at the top and it actually becomes a shutter when it's in landscape mode.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Well, there you go. You've got to try that one.
That's a new one for me.
It works, and it makes such a difference because you can support the camera, the iPhone then, with your thumbs underneath, two pointer fingers on top with the little volume shutter you know, button. And so, you know, it prevents camera shake and get much sharper
photos.
That's
a cool tip.
Thanks. I like to give away tips. So, okay, where were we? Namibia?
Yeah, Namibia. Namibia. So let's just talk about what I have this year. So I'll tell you where I'm going this year. So I'm back in Melbourne at the moment, but in about 5 weeks' time, I'm back in Iceland for a month.
It has taken six, more than that. I asked you to be on this show in June last year.
I know.
When I first started on the radio, and it's taken this long to get you. So come on, tell me the next trip.
I have a month in Iceland in summer. And then from Iceland, I'll go directly up to Greenland.
Yeah.
And spend some time on the ship going into the fjords of Greenland. And then from Greenland, we sail across to Svalbard, which is at the top of Norway, and a little town called Longyearbyen. Longyearbyen's the most permanent, if I get this right, the most permanent northerly settlement. It's at 78 degrees north.
Wow.
So it's a tiny little town. It has 2,000 people in it. And then it's a great place for polar bears. And then I'll be home again for about 6 weeks.
There's an amazing polar bear shot on your website.
there's quite a few polar bear shots.
Yeah, but there's one particularly that you won the award for.
The reflection?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was quite an amazing moment. I shot that only in August last year, that image. And this polar bear just literally wandered up to the edge of this pack ice and looked down in still water and just stared into its own reflection.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And you were there.
Yeah, you have to be there.
I know, but you were there. All right, sorry, keep going.
So anyway, back to Melbourne after that for 6 weeks, and then I'm down to South Georgia Island and Antarctica for 2 months.
And so people can join any of these trips and go and come to these places with you?
Yeah, they can. Most things this year are actually sold out, but next year is already filling up as well. So,
that's fantastic. Yeah. How many people generally join the tours? And
it depends on where on the tour and where it is. Say in Iceland, it's typically no more than 10 or 12.
And what kind of age groups?
Typically, I have had clients as young as in their early 20s and in their early 80s, and just about everything in between. But generally, I would say that the average age is probably in the 50s.
Okay, so you've got to be able to walk and talk, and you know, I mean, you've got to be semi-fit.
Yeah, you need to just a reasonable level of fitness. If you can walk up a steep set of stairs without huffing and puffing, then that's really all you need.
Okay, that's a good thing. And so we said, mentioned before, they don't really have to have any level of experience. They've just got to have something greater than an iPhone or an iPhone.
Even just an iPhone. The main thing is just to have had some familiarity with the camera beforehand.
Yeah.
So that you at least know how to use the basic controls. I mean, and the rest of it we can show you in the field. Most of it's about learning to see and the art of composition and being in the right place at the right time and being surrounded by a group of people who are like-minded.
So that don't mind 4:30 a.m. mornings. Is that what we're talking, like-minded?
Well, when you're talking about midnight sun in Iceland, you're talking about good light from maybe 9:30 at night till probably somewhere around 2 in the morning, and then the sun will start to, that's when the sun sets and finally, and then it will start to come up again in about half an hour. So it can be a long evening.
Would you get 25 minutes shut eye?
Yeah. We go really, really hard. So in terms of view of, we like to be out when the light is good. So if it's raining, we'll have some downtime and, you know, we'll get to catch up on some sleep.
How cold does it get?
Look, Iceland in summer is not cold. We would have an average most days probably around 14 or 15 degrees Celsius. So,
well, that's good.
Yeah. In winter it gets cold, but not in summer.
And you don't do winter trips, only the summer trips?
No, I do both. We do both. So I just finished a winter trip in March. And winter trips are very different. In winter, we really go for frozen waterfalls, frozen glaciers, ice caves, and the aurora borealis, so the northern lights.
Wow.
Yeah. This winter, though, I actually, after I finished that trip, I went up north to, actually to the extreme north, to a place called Hornvik, which no one lives there. There's no roads to get in there. You only can get there by a four-hour boat ride. And I went up there just to photograph the Arctic foxes. And which are wild up there.
How do you find out about these things?
It's very much about finding where the scientists are studying them. So scientists perhaps who are doing their PhDs and know about where these foxes are and just building a relationship with them to be able to find out where to go.
How do these animals survive there? I mean, I noticed
that's an incredible
in some of
question.
Your images and from Tom Parts as well, there's no trees.
No, there aren't no
so
trees.
It's, you know, it's not like they have sort of shelter.
I spent 10 days basically sitting in a snow blind, which is just a hole in the snow in this part of Iceland, photographing these foxes. And we had everything from 0 degrees and rain to minus 25 Celsius. And watching these foxes survive and live and hunt in that environment is just an absolutely incredible experience.
Well, so how do they? Do they dig holes and to you know, under the snow?
No, they come down to the beach area. And the beach for them means food. So things get washed up on the beach, or they have a chance to catch a bird. Or perhaps some sort of seal has died. So they're really scavenging anything they can find during the winter months. In summer months, once the birds return, they have eggs and things like that that they can hunt and do much better.
Incredible. Incredible. So what kind of, so we've talked about the equipment and we've talked about level of experience. So people can, next year you've got available spots for trips where to?
So next year I do a winter Iceland trip in February.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that I'll do a New Zealand trip to the South Island. So that's an annual trip for me as well, to the South Island of New Zealand. Then I'll do another summer Iceland trip. Then I'll do polar bear trip in August. And then I'm back down for South Georgia and Antarctica again at the end of the year.
Fantastic. I don't know how you keep up with yourself. We're going to listen to some more music while we thaw out with all this frozen conversation. This song is by a girl called Annette Sablik. The song is called The One. It's number one in Germany as we speak.
Sounds good.
When I see you walking in that door, I've been blessed when a stranger came along for me to adore. It's like a kiss from an angel.
Was Annette Sablik, this song called The One. And yeah, like I said before, number one in Germany this week. I love trailing through the world music charts and finding great music, and I think
Little Pearls, gems.
Little Pearls, yeah. She's kind of sounds a bit like a female version of Avicii, which, you know, I played on the show, in fact, last June, 6 months before it was picked up in Australia. So, yeah, there you go. I'm here with Joshua Holko. I'm Kendra Abbe. This is Focus on Photography. And we're talking about Josh's awards. We're talking about Josh's journeys around the world, photographing the most incredible things. And Josh, I want to talk about competitions, and because, you know, when you win awards, you actually, nobody says to you, oh, look, submit your stuff. You've got to actually apply yourself and enter. And this is...
You do. You have to get up and want to enter your work. And
yeah.
I encourage people to do it. It's a really fantastic learning opportunity.
It is. In fact, I got an email this week from Global International Travel, Melbourne-based travel company run by Suzanne Duzeman. Hello, Suzanne. And it's a competition run by Virtuoso Travel where they want holiday snaps, and it's a competition for the best holiday snaps. And I think it's a really, really, really good place to start to get you shooting.
I do too. And on top of that, some of these competitions have fantastic prizes.
Oh, they do. This one's $20,000 worth of travel. So I did share it on Facebook.
Can I enter?
Yeah. It's Virtuoso Travel. Just look up globalinternationaltravel.com.au and I'm sure the details will be on the website. But it's a really good place to start. And, you know, often people will step out of their backyards and they say, well, or step out the front fence and they don't know where to start shooting. But if you have a goal like this of holiday snaps, whatever it is, it gives you a focus and it gives you a topic.
It does. And also there's a mindset that comes with it. If you decide, you know, okay, I'm going to enter this competition and the competition is travel and there's a category called, I don't know, people in places. Mm. And all of a sudden you start going through your images and thinking about, well, which one fits into that category and what could I do better to make a better image that could go into this category? So there's a lot that goes on that makes it a really good learning experience.
Yeah, and also with travel stuff, well, it doesn't have to be scenery. You know, I've got a shot I took last week because I was on the Gold Coast, lucky me. And, you know, my mum's sitting on the balcony reading a book, and it was a ragged old book that she found in the library at the place we were staying. And she's got her feet up. She's got, just a normal chair with her feet up and the ocean in front of her, you know, and a sun visor on. And you could hardly even see that it was her, but it was the whole thing of flat out on holidays.
Wonderful.
You know, so it doesn't have to be scenery. It doesn't have to be sunsets and sunrises. It can be anything that makes a holiday great for you.
Yeah, totally. And also just thinking about, you know, what you want to say with your photography when you're taking an image and you're going to put it into a competition. What is it? What's the statement that you're trying to make with the image? And if you think about things in those terms, your photography will definitely become stronger.
Absolutely. And it's learning to see and it's learning to shoot and keep shooting and shooting and shooting. And we're so lucky that we've got digital photography now because you can keep shooting.
Instant feedback too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Instant feedback, instant gratification.
So it is actually, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, the opportunity to shoot an image and then chimp it on the back of the camera's LCD and say, wow, look at this, it's great.
I know, because we had to wait days for, you know, E6 to be processed, the old Kodachrome.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I don't miss those days.
Oh, no, I don't either, but the anticipation was half the fun, really.
It was.
It was. I really loved, I mean, I didn't like waiting. I didn't like losing sleep at night, you know, if I'd done a gig and stuff was being processed and it was going to be ready 24 hours or 36 hours later or a couple of days, and I would think, I know it's going to be fine, because I think you can call yourself a photographer when you can anticipate what happens when light hits film or a digital sensor, and there's never a question in your head of, are my photos going to turn out?
Yes, absolutely.
That's when you're a photographer. But there's, you know, when you, in the old film days, there was always this, well, I hope the lab doesn't stuff up the processing or lose the film, which did happen occasionally.
It did.
Then that was a nightmare. It never happened to me, but happened to a lot of students I knew who kept regularly losing, the lab was regularly losing their imagery.
Sounds like the dog ate my homework.
That's the one. So where were we? Which country?
I was talking about foxes in Iceland.
And now let's go to Antarctica. Tell us about Antarctica.
Okay, so Antarctica is probably the best analogy I can think of is going there is like visiting another planet, because it takes so long to get there. But B, when you get there, it's just so awe-inspiring to finally see it, to see how incredible this continent is, this sea of ice and snow that just goes on forever, and these incredible mountains. It's really an overwhelming place. And the first time you go there, I mean, you go as a tourist, but I think everyone who goes there comes back an ambassador.
Wow. The world is the most incredible place, honestly.
It truly is.
So what started all this, you know, travelling to cold places? Couldn't you have chosen, you know, tropical islands?
Oh, there's no such thing as cold weather. There's just bad clothing.
No, I disagree.
My first love is actually photographing icebergs. So every single one is unique. They're like diamonds. They're no two are ever the same. The way the light hits them and shines through them, and there's incredible shapes and colours.
And I have to say that photographing icebergs is technically very tricky.
In Australia, it's very tricky too.
Oh, no, we don't have many icebergs. But it's like, you know, photographing white on white.
Okay? Yeah,
To get it correct is very, very difficult. You know, we know shadows are blue, okay? So photographing icebergs and doing it properly, as you do, is an extraordinary technical skill.
Yeah, they're not an easy thing to photograph. They're even tougher to print, to be honest. The trying to get the whites to print well is very, very difficult. But it's part of the craft, and it's part of what I love about the whole process. And just some of the shapes and sizes of some of these icebergs are just truly extraordinary.
Oh, God, it takes me away. It really does. I so admire what you do. I think it's just fantastic. And the way that you inspire others is fantastic.
It's a great thing when you get onto, you get down to Antarctica and you get half a dozen people on a Zodiac and they've all got cameras and you're cruising out to that first iceberg.
A Zodiac is a boat?
Yeah, a Zodiac's a small rubber boat.
Yeah.
And you're cruising out to that small first iceberg field and the light is great and just everyone's just so keen to start shooting and get good images. And, you know, you very quickly get into the groove of it and you just see how happy people are to be there in that environment to be shooting and producing work. It's wonderful.
So how do you get there to Antarctica, for example, from here? Where would you begin?
Okay,
from
Melbourne? It's a bit of a nightmare from Melbourne because of the way flights have been changed around in the last year or so. So now we fly to Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
From Sydney we fly to Auckland. From Auckland we fly to Santiago. From Santiago, we fly to Buenos Aires. From Buenos Aires, we fly to Ushuaia. And then we get on a boat for 2 days.
So that's like a four-day journey.
Yeah, it is. It's 4 days to get to Antarctica from here.
Wow.
Yeah, so it very much feels like you've arrived at another planet when you finally get there.
See, I think going to America is a day trip. You know, that's what I say to people. They say, oh, it's a long-haul flight. No, it's a day trip. Even London's a day trip, but Antarctica's 4 days?
Yeah, we live in Australia. Pretty much everything's a long trip.
Yeah, it is, but 4 days is a lot.
Yeah, it really is. It's a long time to get there, so.
And 4 days to get home. So you kind of got to add 8 days to the journey. So you can't just drop in for the weekend.
No, you certainly can't. Pardon me, you can actually fly there these days. You can fly to King George Island, but it adds very, very significant cost to do that.
Okay, so what does it cost? That was going to be my next question. What does it cost, you know, on average to join one of your little Icelandic and Antarctic safaris?
Okay, so Iceland starts around about, for 10 days, fully inclusive of all transport, food, everything. Once you get to the country, you don't need to pay for anything. It starts at around about $6,000 for 10 days.
Yeah.
And summer's a little bit more expensive because accommodation is a little bit more expensive in summer because of the tourism season. Antarctica is a different kettle of fish because it's all ship-based. So we're looking at chartering ships and the cost of having a ship under our belt. So typically a Antarctic trip's going to run anywhere from 12 to 21 days.
Yeah.
And pricing usually starts around about the $10,000 mark and heads north from there.
That's pretty good value, Josh.
Yeah, it seems a lot when you say it in one hit. But,
no, it's not when you break it down into days.
Yeah, when you break it down into days, it's not too bad.
No.
There's some key factors to bear in mind with, particularly with Antarctica, because of the Antarctic treaty restrictions that we have.
What is that?
If you do go to Antarctica, you want to make sure that the ship you're going on doesn't take any more than 100 people, because if it does, you're going to have to wait your turn to go ashore, because the restrictions say they can't land more than 100 people at a time. So it's very important from photography perspective that you go on a ship that takes less than 100 people.
Okay, very interesting point for the Antarctic travellers out there.
Yeah, definitely something to keep in mind. The ship I use, we take 50 people. So 50 gives us a really manageable number that we can have everybody out on Zodiac shooting at the same time. And because we have the entire ship, we can go out when the light is great. We're not told that we have to come back because dinner's ready.
So what kind of ship? Talk to me about the ship. Is it like a luxury liner or?
No, it's no, it's not.
I wasn't joking.
hoping
you'd say yes.
It's a.
Dress for dinner, black tie for dinner.
Yeah, black tie for dinner. No, it's a old Russian survey ship.
Cool.
It's an ice-hardened vessel, so it's what they call Class 1, which means it's not technically an icebreaker, but it can push very, very big ice out of the way.
Yeah, you'd want it to be able to do that, though.
It's a very tough ship, so you know, we've docked it in pack ice several times down in Antarctica and get out and walk, which is just an incredible experience. Yeah.
God, it's mind-blowing. Honestly, I'm speechless. So, we're going to listen to a song who's by this guy called Israel, whose last name I can't pronounce, but the song hasn't left me, and it's kind of appropriate for right now because it's Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Isn't that incredible, Josh?
Amazing.
He's an extraordinary singer, and I cannot pronounce his last name. I know it starts with a K. Sounds awfully ignorant of me, but it's the best rendition of Somewhere Over the Rainbow I have ever heard.
I loved it.
And it doesn't go away. It doesn't leave you. So if you want to find out more about it, just find it on YouTube like I did. Just put in Israel Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and he'll come up. He's a Hawaiian guy. He actually died, which is really sad. But the video on YouTube is so incredible visually, because the end of it, you heard people just then singing and cheering. That was actually the ceremony they had when they spread his ashes over the ocean.
Wow.
And 10,000 people turned up for the ceremony, the ashes spreading ceremony. It was just magnificent, lovely, humbling experience. Josh, we're back. We're talking about photography. We're talking about your journey in photography. Where do you want it? Where do you want to go next? Like, where do you want it to take you? You want to keep shooting wildlife and taking people on extraordinary experiences?
Yeah, I do. At least in the short term, I'm very much enjoying what I do. I mean, I love what I do. Being able to share it with other people. I was very fortunate to turn 40 in Antarctica last year.
40? Actually, yeah. I was asked today how old you were, and I sort of thought, oh, maybe 35.
Oh, I wish. No, I was fortunate to turn 40, and they surprised me on the ship with a cake, and I was serious. I stood up and I said, look, some of the best friends I've got in the world I've made on these trips. And it's really, really true. So it's a wonderful opportunity to meet really interesting people and make great friends.
It is, and we all have a common denominator of loving life.
Yeah, loving photography.
Everyone I've had on the show, you know, that it's the same common denominator. We bounce out of bed, we love what we do, and it's such a gift.
It really is.
It's such a gift. So what countries are on the list, on the wish list for you after the ones you've got booked?
Oh, I've actually not been to Alaska, so I'm very, very keen to get up to Alaska.
More ice.
Yeah, more ice. Alaska, and also I'd like to go to Yellowstone in winter.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah, so I may well go there in January just for a personal shoot and check it out, because I've wanted to go there for many, many years.
Isn't that where Yogi Bear comes from?
That I'm not sure.
Oh, I think it is.
It might be. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it's Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah.
You better look out for Yogi and Boo Boo. I wish I was joking. No, see, you're 40. I'm 54. So Yogi and Boo Boo were very much part of my growing up years. A bit like Inspector Gadget for you, I'd say.
Inspector Gadget, I remember. Yogi, I remember too.
Oh, God. Okay. So how can people find out more, Josh?
Best way to stay in touch with me is probably through my blog. So I try and keep that regularly up to date with what I'm doing, where I've been. I like to write a report on a trip when I get back, just so that I can share it with other people who didn't come on the trip.
Mm.
So my blog's a great way to stay in touch with what I'm doing at a given point in time, also through social media, Facebook or Google Plus or Twitter.
So they can just find you on Facebook, just Joshua Holko?
Yeah, just Google Joshua Holko and you'll find me. Yeah, same on Twitter. I think it might be Holko Joshua on Twitter.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I haven't got Twitter quite yet.
No, it's syndicated for me.
Do you use... Oh, is it? Okay, so once you put up something on one thing, it goes to the next?
Pretty much, yeah.
Social media is so important these days, but, you know, grasping all of it all at once is tricky.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of a necessary evil for me these days, social media. If you're not careful, it can take a lot of time.
It can.
Yeah.
So you kind of need a media marketing person?
Maybe.
Okay, what else is there to talk about? Anything you want to talk about, John?
We can talk about... Why don't we talk about photo apps?
Oh, good idea.
Because photo apps, everyone's got photo apps these days.
We do. I've got a zillion photo apps. Yeah. And some of them are really good and some of them are really bad.
Yeah, I think if the ones that enhance and make your job easier are obviously really, really good. And particularly for people who are learning photography, things like apps that give you perhaps a depth of field calculator is a fantastic way to start to learn, you know, how a lens is going to work with a scene.
Absolutely, and I've been using this one called iFast.
And that one
it's
I don't
not about,
know.
Not about dieting, but it actually gives you a really fast shutter. Bang, 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 straight away. Okay, and high definition, like HDR, high dynamic range for those who don't know. So it's good quality and fast, 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 fast. Because, you know, if you're blowing out candles and stuff, mm-hmm. it takes a minute for the shutter to remember. It's called a buffer time in between when you click the shutter and when it can click again. But iFast... And it was a free app. Might not be free now, but it was when I got it. The other one I use constantly is Cam Scanner.
I don't know that one either.
Oh, Cam Scanner is a fabulous app where you, for all those people with the photos going off on the shelf from 1974 and the colours all funny, or they want to copy a magazine article, anything, it scans your whatever it is you want to scan, corrects the distortion. Once you click edit or you click the tick, it corrects distortion.
Wow.
Which is fantastic. And, you know, I use it for documents. I use it for photographs all the time and magazines. And not that I should be copying them, but if I want to post something on social media, I use Cam Scanner all the time. Give me another favorite.
Oh, I like one called PhotoCalc. So PhotoCalc gives you the ability to put in a focal length. So say 24 millimeters. And then you can plug in the distance from the lens to the subject, so say 2 meters.
That's clever.
And then what your f-stop is, and it will tell you what your depth of field is going to be.
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic. So if you're just learning about depth of field, this is a wonderful tool to have with you in the field. So you
can quickly tell me what the name is again?
It's called PhotoCalc.
So oh, calc. I thought calc. You said calc. Okay.
C-A-L-C.
C, yep. Okay.
That's one that I think is a really, really good app. It used to be free. I'm not sure if it still is. And the other one I really like a lot is a app called Plus 10 Stops, which is an app that's designed for using 10-stop neutral density filters.
Okay.
So I do a lot of slow shutter speed work, so for me that's very useful.
So neutral density filters is like the grading in sunglasses. Some are darker than the other.
Yes.
Okay, and so if you want to reduce light, you use a neutral density filter. So that's really good.
Yeah, it's a great app because if you want to make slow the water down or make the clouds race, yeah, it's a really handy thing to do.
Awesome. Hey, Josh, I'm just looking at the clock. We've got 1.5 minutes to go.
So sad.
I know, it went so fast. But anyway, we can talk for another 1.5 minutes. Actually, 1 minute, because we have to we'll play our outro before the boys come in for the music show that's coming up next. They play some really cool music. And next week on the show, we've got Mary Trantino.
Oh, wow.
Who we love. She is an absolute hoot and clever, teaching photographers how to be business people and how to actually make a living and stop doing things for love, not money.
Yeah, we have to be doing them to make a living.
Yeah. So, Josh, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And we'll be back next week with more Focus on Photography.
Thanks, Kendra.
Listen to us live with